Welcome back to the podcast. This is part two of episode 14, where for the first time, and as my last act as host, I will be under the magnifying glass of someone else. Returning is Magdalena Surma, who was with us just now in the first part. So hit me with your best shot.
Thanks, Colin. So let's start off with you telling the listeners about yourself. Tell us about your education.
From my bio on the website, you can see the basics. I'm going into fourth year at U of T, political science, history, and German. And these connect in ways that are both obvious and not obvious. If, to put it poetically, once you've read enough history and understood enough politics, you start to see the patterns in things, you start to feel the rhythm in the world. And that is, I suppose, the reason why one would do it. That the classic justification that one hears for learning these things is to stop them from happening again. But if you've done any education, this, you would know that, in fact, knowing what has happened before does not in the slightest prevent it from happening again. And I've heard other justifications that one learns of history and politics to prevent evil, which is a reasonable idea, I suppose, but is very easy to use the word evil too quickly, and to put that label on it often distracts from other causes. As the saying goes, never attribute to malice what can be simply attributed to incompetence. So I suppose that trying to get to the heart of things, to the rhythm of the world, is what I have tried to make my education about.
Now, what...
It sounds a lot better in retrospect now that I put it that way, you know?
It does. So, Colin, what and who inspired you to pursue international relations?
I suppose in the strictest sense, what I do is not international relations, because there are large parts of it that are beyond what I do. Economics being the most obvious. I mean, I've done a little bit, but nothing incredibly deep. The questions of science and engineering are at the core of so many challenges that I can't even begin to list them off the top of my head, and yet that has been beyond me. But I guess to get to the heart of the question as to who inspired me, as with many people, it's often a teacher at a younger age that inspires someone to go in a certain direction. And one of my history teachers from high school had a certain methodology that really struck me to keep going in that direction. So I always knew that history would be part of it. And then, I suppose the natural extension of that in the present day is political science. The history of the present day, and the attempt to extrapolate from that into the near future, to try and learn how things work, and not only how they work, but can we predict things to make it useful in the future? As the saying goes, the tree of knowledge has its roots in observation and its fruits in prediction. Mm-hmm.
So, Colin, how have your current studies influenced your career in a positive way? Your career being an intern. Departing intern, regretfully.
It might be a little bit premature to speak of my career. I'm only 21, after all, so there is many decades, that's an odd thing to say, ahead of me still. And yet, for my studies, well, I mean, obviously, my studies contributed to me becoming here, and from what I've learned here, with connecting with other people, with creating new projects, mm-hmm. trying out new ideas, obviously these are things that can be applied in almost any conceivable circumstance. As for how my studies affected my career, the most basic and obvious connection would be that of the third language, German, which... actually, if you look at the data, German pays more... The jobs that require German pay more than those that require Spanish or French or Italian or the other popular ones in North America. That's not why I took it, but it's certainly a nice to have. And as for the other areas, my main foci, it would be nice at some point if I could be part of the Canadian Foreign Service. And obviously these are a foundational block for that, or at least a possible foundational block. There are many ways into it. But even if I fall well short of that, there are plenty of other areas where the the patterns of attempting to uncover new knowledge, the patterns of trying to figure out what will happen, or even understanding what is happening now, these are definitely, I would say, in the core of political science and history. I mean, it's a bit pretentious for poli-sci to adopt the word science, mm-hmm. yet all that scientia, the Latin word, means is knowledge, mm-hmm. and at its core, as I just said, knowledge is observation and prediction. You could adopt that into almost any discipline there is.
Mm-hmm. What were some of your biggest accomplishments while interning at the NATO Association of Canada? Specifically, what would you say would be your defining moment?
A singular defining moment?
At least one.
I mean, it's a cop-out if I say this, but if I can draw a historical analogy, the great man theory of history, that singular individuals can be the linchpins of entire generation decades, I mean, this is largely discredited. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would attribute a singular moment to what I've done here, or I mean, I could try, but that would really, it would be detracting from the truth for the sake of poetry and gloss. Mm-hmm. Probably the biggest thing I've done here is not any one singular moment, but the variety of different things. When I started, Global Horizons had been a blank slate. Mm-hmm. We hadn't had someone fill it for a full year. And so then to have a variety of different projects where we now visit schools once again, we have a podcast, which is something new. We are making now a concerted effort to reach out to our counterpart organizations in YATA, the Youth Atlantic Treaty Association. And of course, we continue writing our articles just as we always have. To have this foundation now for future teams to build on, that is what I'm most proud of having done here.
Tell us about your visits to the schools. What have you learned from the students?
It was curious. So in May, I went back to my old high school, Hillfield Strathallan College. I ended up writing an article about the experience, if I can shamelessly promote myself. And then later in June, Jeff Tian, the editor of, former editor now of International Business and Economy, went with me to Blythe Academy in Toronto. It was startling to see, I don't know if you can call this a generational gap properly. There was definitely a large gap in opinions and attitudes towards intervention, towards how much Canada should be involved internationally, how much NATO matters, how much we should be doing for Ukraine, all these sorts of things, and the fundamental underlying attitudes towards intervention. There is definitely a difference in that. Whether you can attribute this to a generational gap, I mean, it is true that wherever I went, no more than 40% of them could remember 9/11, and I can. That's a fairly significant difference. But I don't think you can attribute it entirely to that. Partly to that, but not entirely to that. Mm-hmm. Part of it is also, I suppose, I mean, it's a bit pretentious for me to say this, as I'm only a few years above them, but seeing as how much one's attitudes do change in teenage years and early adult years, and how they hadn't even finished high school yet, it is absolutely possible, and I think it likely, that their opinions will change somewhat as they go into undergrad, whether it'll be towards what we at the NATO Association hope to change them towards and strive for. I mean, I could hope for that. But even if they change in the opposite direction, it can't be helped that teenagers and young adults are often malleable in, you know, questions of politics. Like I say, there's no one has zeal like the newly converted. Mm-hmm. So I hope that I persuaded some of them that our commitment to the alliance is a foundational block buried so deep that sometimes we fail to see it, but that nonetheless underpins in a significant degree the safety, the security, the prosperity that is in large part present to Canada today.
Good answer. So what advice do you have for youth that are interested in pursuing international relations? What would be the next steps?
Right. I remember, I suppose it could be asking me this after all. I've asked so many other people this, I would be a hypocrite to ignore this. Some of our most viewed articles have been on that very question, where what does one do if one seeks to go down this path? And obviously, the first step is information, which you alluded to in some of your answers, that one absolutely needs, first of all, lots of information. Second of all, credible information, mm-hmm. preferably verified, which is a step above credible, I would say. And something that builds itself towards future knowledge or future predictions. So the information diet, in two words, is absolutely crucial. And of course, there are plenty of places I get my information from, both obvious and non-obvious. The New York Times, the BBC are generally, you know, on the mark when it comes to their facts, but they don't always carry the stories the quickest, where in 2015, you know, sometimes you need to hear about something within minutes and not just hours. The aggregate of social media can be useful for that. Any one Twitter story obviously could be fake, but the aggregate of several dozen can give you a clue as to something deeper that's happening. I also follow a handful of blogs that... The blogosphere in general is not what one would consider mainstream news, and perhaps as large a percentage as 80% are simply mediocre, and 10% might be truly dreadful. Mm-hmm. But within that vast realm of information, there is a small collection of places that have information that is both verified and verifiable, if you want to check it yourself, is very deep and insightful. The authors spend probably too much time looking into some things. They present their conclusions. They do the opposite of what is called straw manning. They don't misconstrue their opponents. They do what is called steel manning, where they point out how opposing arguments are wrong, build up better arguments for the opposition, and then tear down those ones too. Watching this whole process gives you a much deeper insight into any side of any given problem than what one would normally find. And if you can find the places where that happens, then you'll be much better off for it. It's a lot of reading, to be sure. Many of their posts are, you know, 7,000 words in length, which is mm-hmm. like 10 op-eds nearly, but it's absolutely worth it.
Interesting. Colin, what topics did you find challenging? Also, what would you say would be one of your biggest challenges while interning here at the NATO Association of Canada?
Well, I mean, in more trivial terms, I guess, I had my wisdom teeth out a few weeks ago, and recording carefully around that time so that I wouldn't be caught, I mean, minor problems like that. But no, the serious problem, I guess, is trying to figure out where to start. Mm-hmm. At the start of this podcast, there were so many different directions it could have gone in. And it, when you're confronted with such a wide variety of options, the natural reaction for many people can be paralysis instead of decisiveness. So figuring out where to start is one thing. Whether you're writing, whether you're podcasting, whether you're making videos, there are so many options that you simply have to tune many of them out. So I decided, all right, we'll start with professional diplomats. And we'll see how it goes from there. So you reach out to whoever's available, and by partly luck and good timing, two of the consulates that I contacted were available within, you know, a week or 2 weeks. And so that became episodes 1 and 3 of the podcast with the Hungarian and Czech consul generals, respectively. They're still on the website. Although I was less experienced in podcasting then than I am now. My style was not developed yet, I will freely confess. But once you've started down a particular path, it makes it that much easier to decide, okay, what fits into this, what does not fit into this. And overcoming that definitely made things a lot easier.
How do you plan on continuing with the NATO Association of Canada?
I'll be here in a smaller capacity. I will be called a research analyst, which just means that I'm contributing once a month or so, which will now be under your program, not mine. Mm-hmm. So I'll be around here and there to help with things.
Any final words for the listeners?
Final words. Well, I suppose I would say this as advice, I suppose, for anyone trying their hand at international relations, even if that's just informing oneself. Our foe, if you want to call it that here at the NATO Association, is apathy, and our foe is ignorance. To vanquish by the truth what can be vanquished by the truth. And so I suppose to anyone in this line, to anyone following this path, even if it's not with us, I suppose, if I can borrow some famous verse. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not rest, though poppies grow in Flanders fields.
Thank you so much, Colin, for your time. It
Thank
was
you.
A privilege getting to know you, and I'd like to wish you all the best.
And I wish the same in return. It's your program now.
Thank you.